It is 5 o'clock somewhere, and then you're listening to the Real Estate Investor Podcast. My name is Brett Bernard. Our prick-headed, douchey, rosy-colored British producer is here, Richard. And, of course, a good friend of mine, Josh Barge, is in studio with us today. But our main focus is going to be Amish Dolaki. He's one of my investors and a friend of mine out of the Lone Star State. We're going to talk about four extremely successful rehabs that we have done in the last 12 months. So stay tuned.
Are you thinking about investing in real estate, building your net worth and your income, but you're just not sure where to start? I'm Joe Garner. I'm a mortgage officer and an investor. Let's explore your options on financing your investment property. Connect with me at jogarner.com. Call or text me, 901-482-0354. Proud to be a sponsor of It's 5 O'Clock Somewhere Real Estate Podcast.
So we're going to bring Amish on the phone. He's a friend and an investor out of the Lone Star State. Amish, I want to introduce you to Josh. He's here in the studio with us. He's a friend of mine and an investor. This kind of fits into what you're now talking about, Josh. So about a year and a half ago, Amish, you got, what, 11 properties now?
I started buying 2 years ago. I pivoted at the beginning of, about a year and a half ago. I started changing some, I adjusted a bit of my strategy, yes.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. So you bought rehab turnkey first, and then about a little year and a half ago, Amish said, hey, I want to start flipping. And I kind of, him and I went back and forth. He had a formula he wanted to use, and it sounded good. And so we decided to go to work with it. And a couple days ago, Amish and I went through his four that he did, and I was running the numbers. I'm like, holy crap. These things are like gold mines. We did really good on these. I was patting myself on the back. Of course, Amish never said thank you, but that's all right.
But you do that a lot anyway.
Always think my best deal is the next deal. You know what I mean?
So your best year is next year.
That's kind of how I think about it. You know, until I can leave the corporate world behind, my best deal will always be my next deal.
Gotcha. Well, let's go through these properties then, because I want our listeners to understand that this is achievable. It is more difficult than we thought, and there's a few alligators that we ran into that we're dealing with now that I want to discuss as well, because there's things that people need to watch for and evaluate, which goes back to Josh's point about being a little more conservative on that ARV number, and Amish is paying the price for that now. He's worked it out, hopefully, but it caught us by surprise. So let's go through these. What was the first one we bought? Carrollton, okay. And I've got down here that your all-in purchase and rehab was $91,000.
And that's including, so yeah, it sounds like a heavy number, but you want me to go into like the specifics of how?
Yeah, yeah.
The reality was actually my purchase price, as I understand it, and I'll just looking back at my notes here, my purchase and acquisition on Carrollton was actually 81.7, right?
Okay.
And so the 91 number is, it's after having to make, you know, like the monthly payments on hard money, it's interest only. But if you have the right tax guy, that can start to come back to you in some way, shape, or form. But nonetheless, it's still money out of your pocket today, but it's interest only payments. And so the 91 is inclusive of those payments. And that's the number you're talking about. Okay. So I just want to make sure everyone was clear about what does that number really mean.
So this is your purchase, rehab, carrying cost, everything. This is what you have physically into the property out of your, well, total cost, whether it's borrowed money or out of your own pocket. And you're getting $1,512 a month rent.
Yeah. Yeah. $1,542 or $1,524, something like that. Actually, it's a real number.
Those are great numbers.
Now, here's where this is what blew my mind. We did a CMA before we bought the property, and I believe we had this pegged at about 125 ARV, but we had an appraisal done on it, and it came in at 115. I'm going to attribute a lot of that to last year, the down market. We saw some lowering of values. We're now watching them come up again. But in this situation, we're planning on 120, 125. Right, Amish? About where we thought we would end up?
Based on our CMA numbers, that's exactly where we're at. That's right.
Right. So based on that, you should be having about a $25,000 to $30,000 equity position in a property, pulling in $1,500 and something dollars a month with an all-in cost of $91,000. Those are outstanding numbers on that property. But what was the catch? What got us at the end?
The appraisal that came back on the refinance, right? And the appraisal actually came back at geez, I think it came back at like 90, 95,000, something like terribly lower than we thought it was going to be at. So that was one of the, you know, we there were some trials and tribulations along the build process as well, and like the rehab, some of that stuff. But the one of the bigger gotchas was right there.
Well, we learned a valuable lesson, and that was what? When you go to buy a property and you put a contract in for $100,000, that appraiser is going to work his butt off to get you that $100,000 value. But when you go to a bank to refinance that property, the bank is now going to do everything they can to push that number as low as possible so they loan you as least amount of money as possible.
Yeah, they and get more conservative when they're borrowing money.
So what Amish had to deal with was all of a sudden I had a CMA that said this house is worth $125 all day long. Appraisal's coming in at $90. There's no way there's a $35,000 discrepancy. I could see some drop from last year, possibly, but not that much. And then we determined, okay, well, then that's what another lender told me, that, yeah, when you refi, they're going to push that number down. They're going to tell those appraisers to be as conservative as possible. And that is what almost put Amish in a really bad position. Now,
and Brett, just to be clear, right, like what made it even worse was we were looking to refinance. I know we haven't gone to the other properties yet, but we were looking to kind of do the whole thing together because I wanted to get out from under the hard money stuff and then, you know, start putting some principal towards that so I could start to generate some real free cash flow. And that was ultimately the goal here, right? And I think but where we got hung up was we didn't just get a low number for Carrollton. We got a low number for all of
them. For everything.
Right? And so that's when I was like, I was expecting to, at the end of this whole thing, even including the last one, Pamela, that we're going to talk about, I was expecting to walk away with 15-20K, despite the fact that the numbers are really strong from a rent perspective. And despite that, I was like, in terms of value, I'm in way below what any normal person would be willing to pay for this property. I was still expecting to walk away with a good 10-15K minimum in my pocket across all four properties. Now we were talking about having to put nearly $65,000 into having to get to close for all four of these refinance properties.
Right. So that's what the issue was. Now we had a conversation one day and my wife actually came in there and goes, "Are you and Amish fighting?" I'm like, "No." You and I were having a heated conversation.
Not at each other.
We were having a heated conversation about the lenders, right? And the appraisers. And I remember that's when it dawned on me that they're screwing you on these appraisals because they don't want to loan the money out. They want to loan as little as possible out. So they have a much larger spread on the paper they're holding.
Right. It's a lot less risk for them.
So then you contacted your lender and you kind of called them out on it because we had the CMA and then we ended up getting appraisal.
Brett, now let's rewind, right? So now I'm in this situation where now I've got to find net $65,000. That's like an $85,000 swing, right? Against my favor, right? And like in the opposite direction. So now I'm like, well, where are we going to get all this money? And if you remember, we had that multifamily deal that we were trying to push through at the same time, right? So like there was a lot going on and we were kind of expecting refinance is going to go smoothly. So we kind of shut down the multifamily deal, kind of put it on the side and said, okay, how do we deal with these refinances? And I think the lender, who was actually nice, he's a really nice guy. He kind of approached us and he said, hey, listen, find your shining star in your portfolio, put it on the market. And we did that. Right. And we did that. And when we put it on the market, we basically went appraisal for appraisal. Right. And exactly in the two scenarios that we've just talked about, we had one scenario where it's like the lender is driving the appraisal based on a refinance. And then another scenario where I'm trying to unload the property. And I really was in a scenario where I was like, okay, if I need to come up with all this extra cash, maybe I unload my shining star to reduce my costs on the rest of my portfolio. I can afford to do that, right? Kind of what they call sacrifice the queen, right? And so we did that. And when we got that appraisal back.
You just offended our British producer, I'm just saying. I'm sorry, but you can't say sacrifice the queen to a British guy. A British producer is very offended.
I really don't know what I said. No, you know, God save the king, queen, and all the people. especially today of all days, you know, but an American Pope was just announced, I think, you know, so go Chicago or whatever that is.
Sweet.
I think it gives the Bears fans a lot of cause to celebrate. So, yeah, but I was able to turn to the lender and be like, hey, what did your guys get so wrong that I'm looking at a $25,000 difference between our appraisal value done weeks apart from each other, right? And so that's when things really, it really caused the appraisals. And those guys, it wasn't just one appraiser. It was a few different appraisers that all had to, it was really forced them to reopen everything and had to go back and take a long, hard look at what they originally said.
And just so everybody understands this clearly, we got a buyer for that property that was just appraised for $90,000 in a refi, and the buyer had their appraisal done, and it came in at $115,000.
What's crazy? We listed that property at $130,000, and they accepted at $127,500. So had the appraisal come back at even a bit higher, I mean, the buyer believed it was worth $127,500. So just think about that.
Well, all listen, right, it rents for $1,500.
That's correct. I mean, cash flow is good, and that changes. So you've got market value and you got rent value, right? Rent value depends strictly on cash flow. Market value is if it place was empty, how much is it worth? Investors like to fall in that middle range. If they can get a $1,500 a month rent for $127,000, that's a hell of a deal.
Right. The problem is though that banks do not care what they rent for. Right. Those properties, when you're going to get loans and stuff, that was another kind of learning curve for me. They don't even count all of your rental income when you're trying to get a loan
right.
for stuff. You know what I mean? They do not care about rental income at all, or they count for very little.
Was the $1,500 rent on that property private rent, or was that through the MHA program?
MHA.
Right.
So the beautiful thing was then I got the appraisal. We killed the deal, right? But now we had a $115,000 appraisal that Amish could go back to his refi lender and say, dude, what's up?
Yeah.
This is literally 3 weeks later.
Wouldn't have killed the deal entirely if, for example, the appraiser said, hey, you know what? We're only going to look at Carrollton, but we're not going to touch the appraisals for the others. But the right. reality was some of the others that I had, they went up by even more than what Carrollton went up by. They just were severely underpriced. Initially, so talking about a $25,000-$30,000 swing.
Yeah, lesson one here is if you're going to do a buy, rehab, rent, and refi, right, and you're going to use hard money or flip. If you're going to flip, it doesn't really matter. But if you're going to hold it and you got to go into hard money, get your house ready, and then refi it out, you've got to be aware that refinance lender is going to try to pin you down on the value. And so it would behoove anybody doing this to call an appraiser directly, pay them the $400 or $500 and say, I need an appraisal on this property. Get an honest appraisal on the property. That way, when the refi lender comes in at 20, 30 grand under, you can be like, wait a minute, I just had it appraised and this is what I got. Now they may not meet that number, but they'll realize they've got to do something better.
Yeah. And actually it's funny that you mentioned this because the appraiser that did my last property, typically appraisers that get hired by lenders are not allowed to speak with the buyers or the individuals that are trying to refinance.
Because they don't want you to know that they're screwing you, basically.
Right. Well, it's interesting. But yesterday I spent 45 minutes on the phone with the actual appraisal that did it. Because I was trying to negotiate an opportunity to go higher. And so I learned some interesting things. When they do the comps, and this is just for everyone that's listening to this, right? So I think this was net new information for me. And as like a lot of investors, I'm constantly learning and understanding how this thing works. But when they do appraisals, they will show you four or five comps. What you don't see on that paper is they actually weight those comps by a certain percentage. So Brett, if you remember, we had like the Pamela one, you had found an exact replica Pamela deal. Remember this?
That I actually sold 6 months earlier for $132,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they actually only weighted that like 14% or 15%.
Even though it was more of a comp to the Pamela property than any of the other ones were, they only gave it a 14%. Why do you think they did that?
They did that because there were others that were more recently sold that they believed. So also FYI, when you throw a comp at them, if they don't, so appraisers kind of work in funny ways, as many of you guys might imagine, right? We're all here on the same team as investors. So like if they don't see, if it's not easy for them to quickly get all the pictures on the inside and understand structurally, I'm not talking about your house, that easy appraisal. I'm talking about all your comps. If it's not very easy for them to go inside, quickly see, and not even go inside, but like see the pictures on a website or something like that, then they may not wait that particular.
Well, hold on. Kind of lazy.
I'm going to dispute that because they're licensed in the state of Tennessee and have access to the MLS just like I do. And you know, when I do a CMA, I pull that data and I go and look at every single house on my CMA and look at the interior to comp it. Well, they can do the same thing. Lazy bastards.
That's why people like me and Josh and many others here will work with you night and day, and we're with you to the end. And I'm totally with that. But I guess the expectation is that I can't, apparently, like if they want to do that, they've got to get in touch, call the right people, do the right things. And the reality is at some point, like time is money, right? And so like where I'm at right now in this particular part of the process is I've now got we ran three appraisals with a refinance, had to rerun them, took like a month, right? Or more than that. And now I'm at the point where the final appraisal came back on the fourth one. And I'm trying to bucket all these together to run a full-blown refinance so I can get deals on from my title company and all these different things so that to help me kind of get to close without having to bring all that extra money, but trying to work things in my favor. And so like, there's like so many different variables here. Appraiser calls and tells me, well, I don't have pictures, so I need to call so-and-so person. Then that person's going to have to go and take pictures. Then they're going to come back. Then I'll open your file. I'll reevaluate. It takes me 4 business days. Then I'll send it back to you. Lender then takes that, assuming it's a favorable number, puts that back into underwriting. Before I know it, I'm paying another whatever the month's, the interest.
$3,000-$4,000 in interest payment. Rent
on top of that, is it worth it? Right? Like, I don't know. Sometimes it is, but for a $5,000 swing, is it going to be worth my time? I don't know. Right?
Right. Well, let's talk about the property. So I'm gonna lump these together. We got High Meadow, which is a condo. You got Carrollton, we just talked about. Joel and Pamela, all four were rehab purchases, right? With the intent of rehabbing them. You used hard money. Contractor took a lot longer than expected, which cost you more money. But now that we're at the end of that and we've got the appraisal issue, what I wanted the listeners to be very conscious of is if you run your numbers, which we learned the hard way. You run your numbers based on the value. Just know that that refinance lender is going to crush that number. They're going to push it down on you, push it down on you.
Conservative value model.
Right. So I would suggest that once you purchase that home and you get a rehab, get your own appraisal done. So you've got a record. Now, granted, you may get a $130,000 appraisal and the bank may be like, we're not giving you that, but we'll give you $122,000. Well, guess what? That's a hell of a lot better than $90,000, right? Right.
Yeah, and I would just caveat what you just said with one additional thing. Get the appraisal much closer to when, if you're able to put like a renter in there, I would highly advise to get a renter in there. Does not necessarily have to be MHA, but just make sure that, like one of the things that I did, right? And so like, I think I learned this later on, but I, you know, early enough where I think I was able to do it, is after I did the initial acquisition, and actually even before I did my acquisition, I talked beyond Brett and beyond these CMAs and things that we've learned, I talked to my property manager and I was like, hey, I'm thinking about purchasing this property. Here's roughly, once I got it from the rehab person of what they were going to do, I showed it to my property manager. I said, I'm going to do all this work. What do you think I can get from an MHA perspective? And these guys, if you have a good, I mean, again, good property manager, it's hard to come by, but if you have anyone that decently understands MHA or even the market in general of like what people are willing to pay, they'll give you a pretty good range, very close to what they think you're going to get. Based on that number, it makes it a lot easier to figure out, do I want to move forward and buy this property? Now, once you do the rehab, if you buy it, you do the rehab, you move forward, my guidance to all the listeners on the call here is make sure that you're keeping your property manager almost in lockstep with the build process. Because the second they are very close to having this thing done, you need your property manager to have listed like 3 weeks before build is going to be done, or 2 weeks before build is going to be done, or pretty close to, he should be listing that property for you, right? So as soon as he's listing it on the market, right, then as soon as it's done, you're ready to rock and roll with this thing, right? And then on top of that, once you get an tenant in there, then you can start parallel pathing the refinance process. It always looks better. I've heard a lot of different things about, do you need a renter? You don't need a renter to go through the refinance process. But as soon as you get a renter in there, it's another data point you can provide in case they don't come back with a favorable appraisal. It's an additional data point you can provide to help combat a lower appraisal. But you need that, those data points. And you can't just say, oh, I know I can get X amount of dollars. No, show me the lease agreement. Show me how much you're actually getting. And if we're able to do that, and again, also just from a, you know, just from a financial perspective, if you've dumped in all this money, it would be nice to start collecting some amount of rent, all whatever that be, while you're going through this process, and start to recoup some of your monthly expenses on the float that you've been doing with the hard money loan or whatever it is, while the rehab and all the rehab stuff has been going on, right? So that I wanted to just call that out, Brett, because I think that's a really important piece of like,
I'm sorry, could you repeat that? I wasn't listening.
Understand what lenders and these guys are doing with appraisal. It's equally important to understand like how you should be like timing your process with right. all the different pieces of this, of the BRRRR method, well, what you just said, like the buy.
Yeah, it speaks to the notion of being as conservative as possible. If you're very conservative on your numbers and they still work, well, guess what? Then the only way to go is up.
Right. The biggest mistake you can ever make is overvaluing a property.
Right.
I mean, that is the thing that will just absolutely crush you.
And we've watched it happen. Are you done bitching, Amish?
I didn't know we were left to swear on this podcast.
Hey, Amish, I gotta get some clarification here. I heard that you're pretty good at setting off smoke alarms at the Memphian.
Little Birdie told me that.
Man, okay. Actually, oh, that's right. Oh, goodness gracious. Yeah, I don't know. Someone, some insurgent came up in my room and they started lighting a fire. I tried to get them out of my room. It didn't work out.
No, they came up there and smoked a hookah in your room. That's what I heard.
Yeah, I know. I guess a part of me is...
Just like Shaggy, he sang, it wasn't me.
It wasn't him. That was the funniest morning when he came downstairs the next morning. Of course, we all look like death because we just... way too much drinking the night before.
While in Memphis.
And he told me the story. I set the fire alarm off in his hotel room at midnight because he's smoking a hookah. Hilarious. Anyway, I thought that was funny. You need to come back. We need to do it again sometime soon.
And trust me, I'm trying. I've just been traveling so much, but I'm trying to get back.
Let's wrap this episode up. Well, I want to really just kind of give the basic numbers for these four properties. Because, look, after we talked, I was very surprised. I wouldn't say surprised, but I was happy with the end result of what these four properties are. Now, I want to tell everybody, there's four properties and one of them is still vacant. But these are the numbers even with the vacant property. So that means there's only one way to go, Amish, and that's up. Before I do that, have you gotten your refinance issue solved to where you're going to move these out of hard money now?
We are getting close. I'm talking to my lender right in about 8 minutes. And okay, he's going to give me the final. We got, you know, we have the appraisal. That's one thing. But then with closing costs and some of that other stuff, that's another thing.
Sure.
I think it's just we'll work. We're working numbers right after this call.
But you're confident you're going to be
exactly what it means and how it's going to play out.
You're confident you're going to be out of hard money soon.
Oh, 100%. Not okay. Soon. I mean, in under a week, I'm okay, all four good. Out.
Well, let's talk about what these numbers look like. So there's four properties. We spoke a lot about Carrollton. But you have High Meadow, Carrollton, Joel, and Pamela. All of them were purchase rehabs. Your total all-in cost on all four properties is $354,000. That's your purchase, your carrying cost, your rehab, $354,000. And that puts you in four properties, which we did the ARVs based on appraisals, right? Based on the numbers you got from the appraisal, $425,000 ARV. I dispute that. I think it's more, but let's say that is $425,000. That gives you $71,000 in equity in those four properties. And you're getting currently, with one property being vacant, $4,070 per month.
$4,092 to be exact.
$4,092. Okay. So then once you get Pamela rented, you're going to be close over $5,000 for four properties with $71,000 equity in them with an all-in investment cost, if it was cash on cash, of $354,000. And that puts you, once you rent Pamela, at a 17% gross ROI, which is 5 points higher than most investors ever hope to get in Memphis. So that's an outstanding
performance.
Those are
great numbers.
You know what the funny thing about what you just said is you said all in cash.
I didn't think it was funny.
But the beautiful thing about why I went with a hard money loan is so I didn't have to put that much cash down. Right. And so actually, if you really think about the amount of cash that I've put into this stuff, if you just think about like from a closing cost perspective, it's under $30,000.
That you truly cash out of pocket?
I'm not counting like my monthly interest in that number, but if you just think about what I went to close with, and if you take the $30,000 and okay, add a little bit on top of that, maybe we can even get to 50.
Let's call it $40,000 just for shits and giggles.
Yeah, call it 50 just for shits and giggles.
Well, come on, let's call it 80 for God's sake. Hell, let's do. Let's go all the way.
The reality is, if you think about those numbers, like that's the value that I'm trying to unlock.
You take 50. All right, let's do this. Let's say you get Pamela rented and you only get $1,000 a month out. So you're at
Pamela's going to be $1,200 minimum. Minimum.
All right. So 4,092 plus 1,200 times 12 gives you $63,504 a year gross income. Now, if we divide that into your total all-in cost of, what do you say, $30,000 out of cash out of pocket? No, we said 50.
Brett's taking his shoes and socks off right now.
That's 127% return on your investment.
Nice work.
In the first year, 127%. Because you're going to get $63,000 in gross income, and all you have out of pocket cash that you've spent that you didn't borrow is $50,000. Does that sound right?
I mean, there's a little bit more to this story that I'm happy to dive into deeper, but I think the headlines are the headlines.
So the rehab process works, but as long as we make sure everybody understands, there's some rickety bridges on it that you've got to make sure you pay attention to. And one of them is that refi out of the hard money. Because if you don't get the right numbers.
And the hard money itself.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, the hard money itself. What do you think you're going to pay in interest on those by the time you're done?
All interest. Let's just be absolutely clear.
It's all of your carrying costs is all interest-only payments.
Full
right?
payment is an interest. There are only interest-only payments. You never actually pay off the loan or pay any level of principal until you get to the refinance.
Right. Yep. Exactly.
Now, let's talk about that. One more thing, let's bring up. One of the negatives that happened to you also was the time it took for the contractor to rehab that. Because every month it took to rehab those properties, you're paying another interest payment, which costs you more money. Now, even though those things drug out 6 months, you still got in these things at a very good number. However, it's key, and I want to make this very clear to our listeners, hire the right contractor. He may be $3,000 or $4,000 more, but he's in and out in 45 days, and guess what you're doing? You're putting a tenant in and getting cash flow. If it takes 6 months, you just spent an extra $4,000. We could have just spent an extra $2,000 or $3,000 with the contractor and already had the house rented. So make sure you're getting a contractor that can do that job effective and do it quickly and get in and out of that property so you can get a tenant in place.
Along the lines of the sweat equity piece, Brett, like what you were saying, like I just think I really want to reiterate to the listeners, like it's very important. Like the amount of effort that's needed for this type of buy is totally different, as I've realized, than your turnkey situation.
Sure.
And what becomes inevitably clear along the way is if you're not drawing the lines between your different groups of people in your network, meaning like your contractor needs to be talking with your property manager pretty regularly, and not for the reason that I mentioned earlier, but your property manager, if they're any good with MHA, they know exactly what to look for. So they can start catching stuff and making sure like certain types of window locks or certain types of door panels or whatever that is, right? Like it's all ready to go. So it removes the rework necessary that causes that timeline to go long, right? I mean, again, lessons learned, which is why I kind of say it up front, like this requires a lot more sweat equity and staying on top of it. Huge benefit at the end of it.
And let's face it, a lot of investors want to be armchair investors. They just want to, they want cash flow. So buying the turnkey and new construction is a good path for them because not a lot of people have the patience and the wherewithal that you, Amish, and I know Josh have to do these types of projects because it does take time. It takes effort. It takes, you got to use your brain as you go through this and watch every dollar, dot every I, cross every T, because if you don't, you'll lose quickly. So
I just want to add something to, you know, that's part of property management, right? Like that's, I don't use a property manager. I self-manage my properties for that reason, because I have not ever came across one that's one, cost effective. Number two, they don't do, you know, the properties I bought came from a property management company and you could just tell they were terrible. Like they did not take care of them. They did not watch things. Now, I'm not going to say that's every property manager, but you know, to me, it's just kind of a waste because it's more phone calls, you know.
Well, maybe we need to do a little episode on how to self-manage from North Dakota while you're hanging on a utility sure. pole and slapping down
all you need are firehouse subs. All you need are about four phone numbers.
That's it.
Brett's, Nick's, Richard's.
Well, we'll talk about that. We'll maybe keep that conversation going.
Yeah.
All right, Amish, buddy, thank you, man. I appreciate you coming on. And would you please hit me up once you get your refi closed so I can sleep at night?
Yep, that's the next call I'm making. So I will call you as soon as I get some real numbers here, and I'll let you know how it all pans out.
Cool deal. Thanks, buddy. I appreciate you, man. Have a good one.
All right, man.
If you want to reach out to us, 901-692-7401, MyMemphisInvestmentProperties.com. And everybody have a great day. See you next time.
For more common sense real estate tips, listen and subscribe at 5 o'clock somewhere podcast.com. The 5 o'clock Somewhere Real Estate Investor Podcast is a Sound Ideas Group production.
Good one.
All right, man.
If you want to reach out to us, 901-692-7401, MyMemphisInvestmentProperties.com. And everybody have a great day. See you next time.
For more common sense real estate tips, listen and subscribe at 5 o'clock somewherepodcast.com. The 5 o'clock Somewhere Real Estate Investor Podcast is a Sound Ideas Group production.